Hello, everybody. This is Jeremy Torres with The Slight Edge Advantage. So what are you doing today to change your life? What are the small things that you're implementing every single day in your life that's catching you up to the people that you're chasing? A lot of people think you have to do things twice as hard. You have to work twice as many hours to catch your competition, but that's not true. It's the little things that we're implementing and the little things that we can articulate about ourselves, the differentiators, that really is your slight advantage and will allow you to surpass your competition before you know it. But it takes consistency. A model of that consistency, and I mean that word in every aspect, the model of consistency, both in her actions, in her looks, in her attitude, in her heart, is somebody that I like to model myself after. And we want to welcome here today on the Slight Edge Advantage, Dinah, as in dynamite, Red House.
Wow, Jeremy, thank you so much. And I'm so honored to be here. I did everything I could because I couldn't wait to get on your show and talk to you in person. And we have a lot of ties together. And I know we're going to do some amazing things together. So excited to be here and to chat with you today.
We are. And you're talking about an international flight within the last 24 hours.
Yes. So,
when you said,
just
you know,
for you, Jeremy.
I'm going to be Ryan Brady is your guy. He's how we met.
He is, yeah.
And he's an amazing person, an old soul, way beyond his ears. His ears. And so interesting. But, you know, we've been speaking for the last few months. You've been in Europe, and yeah. I've been so jealous of that. But I was like, when are you coming back? You're like, oh, September, you know, 11th or 12th. And I said, okay, well, why don't we wait a week or so, and then you can come in studio. And you're like, no, I'll be there the next day.
Exactly.
I'm like, all right. Your call, but
listen,
I'm here for you.
I will literally cross oceans for you, Jeremy.
You did that. And that's probably a first, so I love it. So tell us about where you come from, because I know that you know, we talk about overcoming adversity, and you've had some businesses in the past that you started and struggled with, like all of us. How did you get to your entrepreneurial spirit? Where'd you grow up? That kind of a little background on yourself.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. And, you know, I would say that it's very interesting how they've done studies on people that come from this little balance of right before it's like too traumatic in your upbringing to where you end up being kind of codependent on, say, substance abuse, things like that. But there is a fine line that breeds an incredible entrepreneurial spirit of what we would call like a chip on your shoulder, right?
Oh, yeah.
And you kind of have something to prove, like a lot of celebrities and some of the most successful entrepreneurs in the world. They kind of came up from these situations that made them have to prove something. And so I would say that I don't differ from that, not to be cliche, but I do feel like I am the exception to the rule in terms of, you know, statistically where I should be. I always joke around and say, you know, I probably should, statistically speaking, be like a stripper or something, you know, whatever, because like just I am the, you know, didn't grow up with parents.
Yes.
You know, the caregivers that I did have at a young age that were my grandparents, they passed away at, you know, when I was in high school, they both got cancer. And, you know, my grandparents were my safe haven. And, you know, they just wanted me to be happy. And it was a very tumultuous upbringing filled with like a lot of any type of abuse you
Where
could think
that?
Of. So I grew up in upstate New York.
Okay.
At 4 years old, basically, I had lost both my parents as caregivers and I was kind of given to my family to bring, which is and it took me many, many years to really accept that it was the biggest blessing of my life because I got multiple mother figures and multiple father figures. And both to this day, like just are extremely supportive for me and have given me the knowledge that I needed to succeed and told me, no, you're going to college and no, you're doing this and no, you're doing that. Not saying college is, you know, the
everyone.
Sign of right. But it just pushed me to a level that it ignited something in me. And also when, you know, coming from a background where you wanted to prove something, I ended up excelling tremendously in high school. So, but I always had this thing where I just needed more, you know, and I also kind of wanted to always have this prolific change in the world and be responsible for change and have this kind of mission to be and positively disruptive.
Well, you said a couple of things there. So Gandhi, not somebody I know a lot about, but I do know that he says you should be the change that you want to see in the world.
Exactly.
Right? That's something that I try to do. And the second thing is positive disruption. We always talk about disrupting in business and disrupting being the disruptor, being especially with the blue ocean, red ocean, you know, dichotomy, which one do you want to be? A lot of people don't have a choice but to be in the red ocean because most things have been done by now. Come on, how many new things can there be with no competitors? But to be a disruptor is one thing, but you added that positive twist.
Yeah.
Which is, I haven't heard it that it said that way. You're the first person that said being the positive disruptor. How did you kind of get that mindset? And speaking of that, I know that you had a bit of a, maybe is it imposter syndrome, where you didn't feel like you belonged, because you are coming up fast. And how did you feel like you've you deserve to be in the rooms that you're in now?
So first, let me talk about positive disruption, because it's one of my favorite things to talk about. It's actually our company, Digital Prodigies Ethos. And so because of that, you know, we tend to be very particular with the clients that we take on, aka Jeremy. So, you know, we like to make sure that we're making an impact, because here's my theory about technology and specifically what I'm doing, which is mobile application development, launching and helping it go to market in a strong way. And that's that. You say, for example, an old lady has a gun and there's somebody trying to rob her. It makes a relatively weak person strong.
It's a great equalizer.
It is the great. Yeah. That's literally what I say.
And that's what you are. Yeah. I love that. Hold on.
That's insane. That's literally my what I say. It's the great equalizer. And so you have a kid in, say, Uganda, and he learns how to write code, and now he's launching an app or doing something. Or you have somebody that, you know, is from a third world country. And, you know, it's just amazing to see how, you know, a kid could be making millions and or, you know, somebody older could and that doesn't know about technology. It's just.
And even better than that, beyond the money, how a person in Uganda or anywhere in the world can develop something that can impact so many lives.
Exactly.
And they don't even, I mean, the vision of that to have. We all have, I think we're born. I mean, we're born. I was telling Jeff that I'm a billionaire in two different ways. One, I have the best family in the world. And I broke a cycle, like I think that you're on, you know, well on your way to doing. But the second thing is being born here, when we were born here, is like beyond billionaire stuff.
Oh, my gosh.
But I think no matter where you are in the world, if you have a vision, you have that spirit, and now you have the technology to get it out there.
Yeah.
What a great time that is. And the impact that you
like
can
the golden
have.
Age.
Oh, it's just, it gives me chills to know that so many people could be impacted by somebody sitting half a world away that thought of something and now has the ability to do that. And Jeff helps get that those ideas to market.
Amazing.
And you know Jeff Hoffman.
He's my idol, my hero, Jeff Hoffman. Shout out to you.
Yeah, I think you actually called him when he was driving here.
I did, yeah.
From Orlando. it was just such a weird time that we had.
What
and that tells you that we're all supposed to be here.
Exactly.
So sorry to bring you off that point. I tend to do that.
No, you're fine. Absolutely.
So, but yeah, and you help that now that you've said that's where you want to spend your time.
Yeah. And it's positive disruption, but also socioculturally, like in terms of you'll never date again the same these days, right? Mm. We have Tinder, Hinge, all these Bumble things, right? And then you'll never, you know, think about convenience and transportation and you know, travel the same way. Everything literally in the last 5 years has been completely disrupted. Yeah. And some would argue positive or negative. So, you know, but.
Well, AI right now is the huge debate, is whether it's positive or negative.
Oh, yeah, for
it's
sure.
Positive, but negative.
I mean, we've all seen Terminator, right? I'm just kidding.
It's coming. Yeah.
And I think it's like anything else. Like, you can use things for good. You can use things for bad. Yeah. And so, like, for example, I don't want to give any shameless plugs, but I will say, like, some of the technology we're working on ranges from trying to end child abductions and sex trafficking using peer-to-peer geolocation and using people to find people rather than waiting for Amber Alerts. That's a very antiquated system. And also, like, things
I
like
think they used Ring just recently to help catch this guy in Pennsylvania who was on the loose for 2 weeks. And they used the neighborhood rings to kind of narrow that down recently. And then
was that the guy that escaped jail?
Yep.
Oh, I saw that.
And then that crack team from Austin came in with the hero dog.
Oh, and amazing.
Caught his ass.
That is great.
But that's what that was the community technology.
And that's what I mean, peer to peer. So if you think about like the apps that have really done the biggest kind of shifts in the market, they're always just really kind of eliminating a middleman. They're just connecting like these niches.
And the funniest thing is that the thing like Ring, the Shark Tank all passed on it.
Yep.
You know, it's like, and Jeff created Amazon before Amazon, of course. Not to make this all about Jeff Hoffman show, but
don't mind.
Jeff created Amazon before there was Amazon. What? That was his first venture.
Wow, I didn't know that.
He's selling stuff online to what to
Jeff,
to,
you to, genius
to,
you.
To new mothers.
Wow.
And they didn't trust the technology to put their credit card in the computer. So it failed.
Wow.
That was his idea.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So the ring, I mean, who doesn't have ring now? And all the sharks passed on it.
Yeah.
So that's why when I talk to people about my new venture, and everyone says yes, and the people who say no, I'm thinking, okay, you can say no. I get punched in the face as a hobby.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah. You do, literally.
but when you keep saying no and you keep reaching back out to me and telling me why I shouldn't do it, and you keep unsolicited to sending me things, I'm thinking there's an ulterior motive here, or you're not supposed to be in my tribe.
100%.
Even my orbit at this point.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And get on another planet. Stiff arm. See,
So, yeah, I'm totally on board with what you're saying, but it's not everyone's ready for this yet.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's hard to know when to continue going when we're such innovators.
Agreed. And I look at the market like I never want to be first to the party. So I usually try to go for markets that do have a little bit of some barrier, kind of breakdown in the beginning.
Right.
I'm doing a few different rideshare apps. I launched an all-female Uber app for a client, Kim Evans.
Uber.
What's that?
Uber.
I love that.
Better,
I'll say, hey, I'm taking
about
it.
48 hours before I post this.
Trademark. So it's an all-female Uber app, and she's just an amazing entrepreneur. I had an amazing time working with her. We're working on a cannabis delivery app. I was just featured in Canatech magazine. Deepak Chopra was on the cover a few months back. So, that one is to do your cannabis and marijuana license telemedicine.
Right.
So you could do it virtually, and that's going to be a game changer too. We have a lot of people excited for that. So, I mean, there's just these niches where, say for example, somebody does, have treatment, maybe they can't drive, they're going through chemo, something like that, and they just really need to have things delivered to them.
Right.
And that's already been done in California, but no one's really yet to kind of penetrate the full marketplace yet. So we're going to try to do that in a big way.
So that is kind of where your aspirations are. But your mindset got you here.
Absolutely. Because
you weren't always in this mindset. Yes, you did well in school, but that doesn't say much, because a lot of people do well in school actually are more introverted. Mm-hmm. Really, that's why they did well in school.
Yeah.
So when you got into entrepreneurship, and by the way, entrepreneurship is available.
Ooh,
I checked it out yesterday. And I told someone about it, and she's like, that's not for me. And I said, okay. But I didn't feel like buying it. And so anyway, another thing there for you. But when you got into entrepreneurship and you started kind of figuring things out and experiencing some failures, or figuring out how do you start a business or start up bootstrapping businesses.
Heel strapping.
Hold on. Bam. Love it.
Bam.
How do you get your mind wrapped around success or being open to it?
Yeah.
Stops no, a lot.
You're so right. Well, first of all, it's kind of funny because the year before I launched my business, it was kind of like that transitionary period. I think I had about maybe 6 jobs that year, and I got fired from each one of them because I was so not focused. And it was like kind of like when you're staying too long at the club and you start to have the lights turned on and you're like, this is kind of nasty.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like the floors are nasty, and the person dancing on you just doesn't look the same. Ooh. You're just like, okay, it's time for me to go.
Yeah.
And I said, when I first moved to Florida, I called up a good friend of mine who I'd done business with for about a year, Philip Smoke, shout out. He's a good mentor of mine. And I said, I'm coming to Florida for 2 reasons. And I was still full time. I had a 6-figure salary at the time, very comfortable. golden handcuffs. I told him, I'm coming to Florida to make my first million and to find my husband. So,
so how are you on the million?
I've accomplished one so far, and I'm single. So,
right, so one, hey,
that tells you that
you get the one. It's not, the other one won't be far behind.
Exactly. I don't think so.
For the wrong reason, gotta be careful now.
I know, right? I just got to tell him I'm broke.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I was going through this kind of transitionary period, but I said, by 2022, I'm launching my business. Right. I'm quitting my job. I'm doing this full on. And I want to be different about the way I do things. I don't want to do things the way everyone else did. So I said, let's study the greats. Like, let's study the best CEOs. Let's read every one of their autobiographies. Let's find out what the best way to do and approach the business. There. And so I literally started in, I think it was like January 2022, found Ryan. Ryan wasn't going to take the job. I had to literally pitch Ryan. I'm like, look it. We're doing some big things. Yeah. You're going to want to be part of this.
Yeah,
and special. He is probably one of the best human beings I've ever met. Ryan Brady, you know, he's now a co-founder with me for our incubator, Prodigy Ventures, which we just launched recently. And it's just, you know, he's got the heart of gold and he has persistence and he's hungry, tenacious. And he's a 2-time TEDx speaker. So, yes. I mean, he's on the team.
Multi-language.
Oh, my gosh. There's not a language he doesn't speak.
He's a world traveler. Yeah. Backpack. Just get it up and go and fits in anywhere. He's a sweetheart, too.
Yeah.
I fell in love with him the first time I spoke with him. But when we spoke, you know, he reached out to me on LinkedIn. And what LinkedIn is typically a pitch fest, right? You get pitch slapped as soon as you accept someone. But something about his approach was organic. It was truthful. It was right up front. It wasn't really a pitch. It was just, this is what I can do if I can help you.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad that I took his call, which I don't really do.
Yeah.
Well, I do now. I do now because now with the product, with the platform, instead of being a coach, I have the platform and all these people don't read your bio or your page. And they say, hey, I can help you. And I go, your timing is uncanny. I got 5 calls a day from LinkedIn now.
That's funny.
And then I turn around and pitch slap him right back.
Right.
You know? But Ryan was very unique. And he's like, you know what? You got to talk to Dinah. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to do some great things together. And I believed him.
Yeah.
I did. And I'm ready to go to war.
I love it. Let's do it. I'm ready to go with you.
So what is Digital Prodigy? How do you help people? What makes you different from the other apps? Because there's a ton of them out there.
There are, yeah. Yeah, we're actually, so we're not an app development company, and that's what makes us different. We're a hybrid agency, which means that we are more about the finished product, and that is not an app that's completed, right? When you finish a product, your MVP, your minimal viable product, whatever it is, that's really just your key to the door. You still got to walk through. And so we specialize in actually the go-to-market strategy. We come up with creative approaches. ASO and different things like that is what actually is a game changer, because you don't want to build a billboard in the forest.
So I didn't understand right at first what ASO was, but when Ryan said it, it made total sense.
Yeah.
This is SEO.
For the App Store.
For search engine
optimization.
AEO is app engine optimization, basically.
App Store optimization. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it really does make a difference, because if you think about, like, say, for example, in like Miami, right? If you can be on the SERPs page, like search engine result page for, say, roofing or glass repair or something like that, you're automatically a 7-figure business.
Yeah.
It's just the organic presence of the search results. And in the App Store, there's about 500 million searches a day going on. Mm. Believe it or not, it's like
in
the App Store.
Or how much is
worldwide
on Google?
Billions, billions, but the competition is billions.
Right.
So you're dealing with way more competition versus an app store that has like maybe a million apps
in it.
So it
still sounds like the competition, there's a lot of people searching for things.
Yeah.
So you have less competition, and the way you do your organic search functions puts your clients
and the top results.
Ahead.
Exactly. If you look at some of our results, which I have on our website, like they've gone from not even ranking in their category to being like top 1 or 2. We've actually ranked number 2 for the word Bitcoin and crypto with a K,
which is
right under Coinbase, which is a billion-dollar unicorn.
Right.
So, I mean, the fact that a boutique firm is competing with a unicorn, like to me, I'm like,
that's what it is. Look at the one of some of the biggest marketing agencies, you know, Mad Men, Madison Avenue, but there was this little agency in like Minnesota or somewhere, St. Louis or something. I forget which product they had. I really wish I remembered it because it's special. But they were competing with Madison Avenue.
Yeah.
Because they're a boutique.
Right.
And they thought though they had, you know what it was? They had the pulse of America.
I love that.
Where Mad Men, you know, over time.
Got complacent.
They got in their own, they were product of their own salaciousness.
Yeah.
And they believe that they set the trends.
Right, right.
And they did for a long time.
Yeah.
But we have shifts.
It reminds me of Kodak.
And they didn't shift.
Kodak.
Oh, God.
I'm from Rochester, so trust me when I say it's a very near and dear story. My grandfather worked at Kodak. He actually helped create the digital kiosk. He was actually part of the innovation team for that. And that's also why I went to RIT, it was its alma mater. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right. When there's shifts in the market, you have to be adaptive. Yeah. And that's why we're extremely open to Web3, crypto, blockchain, all of that we're working on, because we don't want to be behind. We're not going to be left in the dust. Like, no way.
And, you know, I think it was Blockbuster who, their nail in their coffin was that they didn't want to give up the $1 rewind fee.
Wow.
And they didn't see that digital was coming.
Yeah. They're
like, look at all the money. I think it was, I don't know, 8% of their revenue was the rewind fees.
Wow.
And they're saying,
you gave up 8% for 100%.
Oh my God. It tanked them. So that's the shift. And what I think when you say your boutique, you're working with cutting edge, innovative, different thinkers. And so you are much more in touch with what they can offer. Now, the flip side of that is knowing when the users are ready for it.
Yeah.
Right. So that's kind of your dilemma, is to say, yes, you got all this stuff, but boy, you can't explain it yet. You know?
Yeah.
You can't tell somebody in two sentences what it does for them.
Exactly. No, you're right. And the thing is that you have Lyft and Uber, right? For example, Lyft came out first.
Okay.
But Uber is now the major player in the market.
Was that because they were ahead on tech?
It was more about, I think, the marketing strategy, and also as a Y-com company. So my personal theory, and that's why Digital Prodigy is so different, is we help them create the MVP, the minimal viable product. And then that's what you use to leverage the next strategy, which is raising capital. Because the last thing you want to do is bleed yourself dry. And let me tell you something, guys, if you're building an app...
My pockets are getting light.
Don't worry. We're going to bring it all back 10 times over. But the thing is, right, so, you know, a lot of people launch an app and they go to a marketing agency and think, oh, great, I'm just going to market the shit out of it. And I'm going to just put a ton of money in it. And I have seen so many apps just shit the bed because they don't get that. You can do way more damage using organic search methodologies and all the things that we do, which is a combination of social media strategy, ads on Apple, incentive search ads, all these things that will make it so that the budget gets stretched wider while you're actually reaching out to investors in the tech space. So we actually, it's part of our package is we create pitch decks that get to over 200,000 tech investors in our network that we try to raise capital. We see if there's interest, and we even act as like a fractional team, because the first thing an investor is going to ask is, who's your squad?
That's right. And then once you've had a couple of successes too, then you get some credibility.
Exactly.
And they all line up.
I mean,
we do some investing. My wife's a broker, and we have a number of investors who just waiting to hear from her.
Really?
You know, they're from other countries, and they just said, do the numbers work or not?
Exactly. Yeah.
Pull the trigger, because we've had winners.
Yeah.
You know, so once you have that in whatever space you're in, that credibility, when you've made others win, you know, that's priceless.
And that's why I look at the lifetime value of a client. You know, I could easily
hold on.
You know, you could easily be charging like an exorbitant amount for these app projects we do.
So short-sighted people.
Exactly. So it's like, why would I do that when I can, number one, be partners with my clients? I can work towards a common goal. I can help them get ROI. And then when they go to reinvest in the app or they get an investor, they're coming back to their A team because we help them get there.
Yeah.
And so that's why I see the value.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we have plenty of clients that we say, you know, what does your product sell for? Let's say it sells for $59.
Yeah.
You say, would you spend $75 to get a client? And they're like, hell no. It's only worth $59. I'm not going to spend $75 to get a $59. I go, okay, so that you get $59 to get them in the door. How long do they stay with you? For about 5 years. How often do they spend money? You know, once a year. And what do they spend? About $2,000.
Mm-hmm.
And so then when you go, would you spend $75 for a $2,000 customer? And
you
go, hell yeah. And you go, well, duh, stupid. Stop being so short-sighted.
Exactly.
It's called a loss leader, but you're getting him in, and what's your lifetime value?
Yes.
You know, that, and there's more that goes into it than that, but that's the short-sightedness that a lot of people have.
Yeah.
That they don't understand what a lifetime value means, or even to build lifetime value into a customer.
Exactly.
They want to have that churn, man. You know, a lot of think that the churn is it, and that's just more work. It's easier to
100%.
And a lot cheaper to make money off an existing customer.
100%.
Yeah. So that's where you build your value and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. And we really try to make it so that it's like a very collaborative process so that clients feel like they're really being heard. Like you go to any other developer, of course you can go overseas, you can pay, you know, close to nothing for an app, but they're going to literally, an old partner of mine, Macy Mata, she was talking about how she drew wireframes for her app and sent them to her developer overseas. And he literally did exactly what was on the napkin.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's like stick drawings. And it was like literally like it was just absolutely terrible. So like we actually co-ideate with our clients. Yeah. So co-ideation is us like coming together, bringing our expertise and our SME and our knowledge and kind of coming to the table and saying, this is what we recommend. Now bring me your expectations. Let's meet in the middle. Right. So
Yeah. It's the big idea. Start slow. I'm guilty of not doing that. But. You know, the mistakes build calluses.
Make you strong.
So the company's strong. It's getting stronger. I'm happy to be the newest member on that team. Yeah. I've been bragging. I couldn't wait for you to get back because the people I've been telling, they want to see what this is going to be.
Oh, I love it.
And so, yeah, a lot of people are waiting to see what happens with this. So what is next for you?
So obviously we're going into this new venture of Prodigy Ventures, which is our incubator. We're actually going to be submitting our first application to Y Combinator this winter. So I'm going to see what happens with that. I strongly believe like our technology and our innovation is probably one of our strongest suits. But obviously it's kind of like anything else. I can't be a million CEO, CEO of a million companies. So I try to get strategic partners when I can.
Yeah.
Hence like why, you know, with several of our app clients now, I actually was the one that pitched them on the idea. Mm. It was not the other way around. So I was like, look it. For example, Dr. Bridget, who's the cannabis leader, she speaks all over the world. She's like a thought leader in the cannabis space. I go, you might want to look into this app idea I have. And she was like, let's do it. And she took the reins and, you know, we're partners. And so it's a win-win, you know, and it allows me to branch out a lot easier.
And then I heard you're doing a little writing lately.
I am. That's right.
Yeah. Welcome to that club.
I'm very excited. I'll need some guidance from you, Jeremy.
I've got a little bit of knowledge on it. What I don't have, I know the right people, but what are you writing about? What are you trying to get out to? Who are you trying to touch with that?
Yeah. Well, I think it all goes back to my like personal brand ethos of the positive disruption. Yeah. You know, I notice what happens as I go into my very infant like age of a CEO, right? I'm still very new to this. So I'm not going to act as if I know anything. But I do know some things. And, I realize that people start to take on and people's businesses start to take on the personality of the CEO and the founder. Yeah. And you are only as strong as a founder. And I say that with a lot of our app projects where I'm like, I don't know, or hell yes, because that founder is tenacious and I love them. Let's do it. So I can only be as strong. My company can only be as strong as my personality and my limiting beliefs. And those things need to be checked all the time. And so as I kind of dove down, and kind of really, looked at things retrospectively, I'm like, I'm only going to be as big as my mind will let me be for a company. And so it kind of took me down this new perspective of a lot of theories that I like to personally kind of dive into, which is attachment theory, which kind of just predicts your relationship model and your internal working models in your mind. And so because of the fact that it's so culturally relevant right now, I named a book, my book, The Five Toxic Languages.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a little bit of psychology behind that too.
Absolutely. Well, it brings in attachment theory by John Bowlby. It brings in a lot of like the epigenetics that I learned from, Becoming Supernatural, Joe Dispenza, who I like freaking love, and Abraham Hicks, like a lot of these just like kind of like thought leaders today in this kind of conscious space we're living in. Yeah. And so it brings all these things together in my years of therapy.
That's good. Don't stop working on yourself.
Absolutely. You know. And so this book is just a way to impact the world in terms of relationships because, you know, I see a lot of people that let, you know, their personal life affect their business.
Yeah.
And for me, it's like, why not? Right.
Clutter
it's your
mind,
personal life.
Everything.
Exactly. And so when I looked at like the fact that I had so many personal things going on that I had to be resilient and get through without it affecting and just put a smile on my face, but deep down it's affecting your productivity. It's affecting your life. So you start at the core, you start at yourself.
Yeah, and it limits your vision.
Yeah.
It limits a lot of things. It limits your energy.
Energy.
No matter what kind of smile you have on your face, the energy is still
there. It's still there.
Yeah.
You can't put lipstick on a pig. So in terms of like me looking at the world and wanting to make a change in the way that I could, I wanted to share my knowledge and my personal experience with these certain things. So it's basically a walkthrough of five different relationships in my life.
I love that.
And it tells a personal story where I was toxic in all five of them.
So you're taking that finger really and pointing it back at yourself and taking Absolutely. Responsibility, having accountability for the failures of the relationships. But then how does that pivot? You overcome those and going forward, building other personal and business relationships.
Yeah.
Story of my life.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of people. I was an idiot to a lot of people, but I also think I was very good in other ways. I mean, we benefit, it's mutual beneficial, but at the end of the day, yeah, there's a lot more hurt that I inflicted just because I didn't understand. You know, when you have childhood trauma, there's something.
That's what it's all about.
It's about the not trusting the people who love you. Because the people
you're giving
who
me chills, Jeremy.
Love you and treat you
so
right.
So that's didn't. Exactly Those what this book is about.
Yeah, that's
it
beautiful.
It talks about the fact that we will abandon things that terrify us because we're never seeking love. We're actually only seeking familiarity. Mm. And when love to us or that familiarity is toxic or is hurtful, we will always be attracted to hurtful situations. And the one thing that we have to understand, and this is what the whole book is about, in one word, it's empathy. So it's stopping this whole like pattern of pointing the finger and saying you're toxic and you're toxic, and it's saying why are we
where
like
does
this
that come from?
Why does somebody ghost you? Oh, maybe they're like afraid of feeling something.
Yeah.
Why does somebody like, you know, maybe hurt people, maybe because they're hurting?
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
so hurt people. Exactly. So it's a way to understand people, be empathetic, also understand that like at that level of whatever happened that maybe you hurt somebody, you were doing the best of which the capacity you had and in operating as a human. Yeah. You were like my mother, she didn't raise me, right? And she beats herself up because she said she wasn't there for me. And I said, at that time in your life, you doing what you did was the best option that you had. And if she didn't do that, I would never be the person I am.
Right.
And now we're best friends. Yeah. We're absolutely like, I mean, I talk to her every single day of my life. But if it wasn't for that, like her doing the best that she could, and she's forgiven herself. And I've seen the transformation in her because forgiveness is the only way that we can eliminate the shame.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I agree with that. I lost two brothers to suicide and I blame myself for one of them.
Wow.
My younger brother. You know, I was a patriarch of my family from a very young age.
Yeah.
So when that happened, I took responsibility. But I had to forgive. I ended up having Annie Lieb, shout out, to forgive little Jeremy.
Yeah.
The little
shadow
kid,
work.
You know, in me and allow myself to really understand that that kid was still in me and trying to protect everything, including myself.
Yeah.
You know, so then you just
who's looking out for
that.
Jeremy as a little kid, right?
Boy, nobody was.
Exactly.
So then I finally gave him permission. And it was all a cathartic, off-the-cuff writing, you know. And then you don't do anything with it.
Like,
you don't give it to anyone. You don't post it anywhere. But it was very powerful.
I love that.
You know.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that was where the transformation started for
That's
you.
That's the biggest one.
Wow.
That's the biggest one. And then the second biggest one was why I treated the people in my life the harshest, and that was because I didn't trust them because I was waiting for them to
abandon you.
To abandon or to betray.
Betray.
Yeah, to betray me. And fuck abandon. Abandon me all you want. I'm
cool
with that.
But don't betray me.
Yeah.
Well, you and I are the same toxic personality. I call it the star. The star is the person who's fear. So as the star, you probably relate to this. You're hypervigilant. You look for signs that someone's going to betray
and
you.
And it's not, too. It's that bias.
Yeah.
That they're not betraying me. They're not talking shit about me, but I take
you
it that
think
way.
So. Yeah, because you're looking for clues and hints, and you're looking for all the signs that it's going to happen, that they're going to betray you, because, you know, nothing is worse than thinking someone is something to your face. I think Jordan Peterson talks about it. It's almost like you're not the same person anymore when you realize somebody has betrayed you because that persona no longer exists.
Well, Mark Twain said you'd be surprised at how little people actually think of you.
Exactly right.
You know, so it's like
you think you're
not
the center of their universe.
Yeah, you're not. Well, this has been fantastic. I don't know. I mean, we could talk for hours.
I know.
I'm not Joe Rogan. You know, you're not Seth Rogan, I guess. I don't know. We could talk a lot more, but we want to keep this thing interesting so people watch it. I'll have you back because we can go on a tangent and for another show too for that kind of stuff.
Love it.
But to keep it real, keep it business. Tell us again about your business, how they can reach you right here.
Absolutely. So Digital Prodigy, and that is Prodigee, not with a Y, please, because apparently there's some weird person that tried to take over my company name, but I refuse to change my business name, so I'm not doing it. He's like in jail or something. It's crazy. Like he like scammed all these horrible people. So anyway, Digital Prodigy with two E's at the end. You can go to .com. You can follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram. I am Dinah Redhouse, and I am the founder and CEO of Digital Prodigy, as well as Prodigy Ventures. So I look forward to anybody that wants to do any app work, such as Jeremy here, our new wonderful client, and I hope to be back.
You will be back, because I'm not going to let you far. But I appreciate every one of you watching this, watching the shorts, watching the long form. What is it? I want you to put down in the comments. Did you get something today that can help you move forward? Because this all we got is today. And all we could do is make us better for tomorrow. Yesterdays are gone. But if you don't learn from those things, you're going to repeat them. So put down in the comments, what are you going to stop repeating that's holding you back? Thanks for watching Slight Edge Advantage. We'll talk to you again soon.